are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. Up next, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. And thank you so much for listening. This is WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM on your dial, streaming at WRFG.org. And welcome to Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I am your host, Greg Bossen. And again, thanks for listening. How's everybody doing? I hope you're doing okay. We have a really good show tonight, actually. The opinions expressed here are those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, staff, volunteers, funders, or listeners. What a beautiful day it was today. Of course, I wasn't in it. I was in my office all day. Very unfortunate. But I hope you got to get out because it was absolutely gorgeous today. As far as our show, our guest tonight is Everton Blair, who is the first openly gay man elected to serve, first of all, on a board of education here in Georgia, but especially as chair. So he is the chair of the Gwinnett County School Board of Education, which is the largest school the largest county in the entire state when it comes to students. There's around 180,000 students. And Everton has served on the board since 2018. It's a five-person board, but he was elected by his fellow board members in January. So he is now the board chair and responsible for 180,000 students. He's gay, he's cool, and I thought it'd be interesting to have him on the show. So we have him tonight. But before we do that,
news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh, no, she didn't say what.
So I'm going to start with COVID because finally we have good news. I'm sure you are all aware, but I like to give you the actual statistics because I'm a numbers guy. So February the 22nd, which was yesterday, we had 1,518 new cases. So our seven-day average these days is around 2,800. It's just under 3,000 new cases a day. And that is down from where our seven-day average was almost 10,000 cases a day in the middle of January. Just to give you perspective, when we were in the middle of our summer surge, we were having over 3,000 cases a day. Now we're at, well, our seven-day average is still around, well, it's just under 3,000. So we're about where we were when we were having the summer surge, yet somehow this sounds like good news, and that's because things went crazy over the holidays. And then if you go back to when this all started, back in April and May, we were averaging around 600 cases a day when everybody was freaking. Now we're at 1,500 cases a day, and or actually 3,000 cases a day, and it's a seven-day average, and everybody thinks it's great. So anyway, but just here in the last few days, we now are at a point where, you know, we're, well, like I said, yesterday it was 1,518 cases. It's probably going to go up because the numbers are a little, there's a lag time there. So the seven-day average is probably the more relevant number, which is just under 3,000 cases a day. So basically putting us back where we were during the summertime. But let's keep going in the right direction. Please keep wearing masks. Locally, this is unfortunate. A young transgender woman seeking medical help from a Norcross psychiatric center was instead denied medication and assaulted, strip searched, and faced 2 days of discrimination and harassment, according to a federal lawsuit. Samantha Jolly, now 20, alleged the mistreatment started as soon as she entered at Lakeview Behavioral Health Hospital. She sought medical help for her depression and suicidal thoughts. Instead, she faced discrimination, negligence, invasion of privacy, assault, battery, and emotional distress, according to the lawsuit filed on February the 5th in U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Georgia. The staff at the facility mocked Jolly shortly after her arrival on February the 14th, 2019, according to the lawsuit. Two male nurses strip-searched her and refused to provide female nurses when Jolly requested them. The attendants laughed and mockingly asked, "You have a penis, right?" Then they made her strip completely. The male nurses would not allow Jolly to cover her breasts. When allowed to put on her clothes, the men then patted her down and touched her breasts and inner thighs, according to the lawsuit. This is not a woman going in jail. This is a woman trying to get help for depression. This is unbelievable. When Jolly asked for her prescription medication to treat her chronic daily headaches, the staff denied her request and then repeatedly misgendered her. She also was also denied her daily estrogen medication. In a conversation between the floor manager and two employees, one of the male employees who had mocked Miss Jolly earlier at the nurse's station, called Miss Jolly a pill-seeking tranny and a guy who thinks he's a girl. A patient advocate also harassed Jolly, and other patients questioned her gender, according to the lawsuit. An employee referred to Jolly as just disgusting and delusional. Lakeview's whole mission and purpose is to help people in crisis like her and for them to treat her in this most untrained and unprofessional way is a violation of her rights and the basis of our claims, said Anita Bala, a partner at Buckley Bill. That obviously is the attorney that's representing her. And boy, isn't that the truth. It's just awful. To discriminate against somebody when they are in crisis is deplorable. I agree completely. So we'll see what happens. Her attorney, Buckley Beal, in June of 2020, scored a historic win for LGBTQ equality in the U.S. Supreme Court. The firm represented Gerald Bostock. This is a gentleman in Clayton County who was fired for being gay. In a 6-3 decision, on three cases, including Bostock's, the court ruled that existing federal law prohibits discrimination against employees for being queer. And that made it not okay to fire people for being gay in states that didn't have protections. Georgia was one of those states, which is wonderful. So you can no longer be fired for being gay legally here in Georgia. However, there's no state law. There's just a federal law, which is unfortunate. And you can still, in this state, be denied housing, be denied entrance to public spaces if you are gay. Which is why it's very important that this next piece of news is occurring. And this is that the Equality Act, this is a federal act, will again be called H.R. 5. That's the name of the act. And it is being, and the fact that it's H.R. 5 is signaling that it is a priority for House Democrats, one of the early bills. It passed the House of Representatives in May of 2019, but of course the Senate wouldn't take it up. So the Equality Act, just so that you understand, guarantees explicit and permanent protections for LGBTQ people under our nation's existing civil rights laws. The legislation would provide clear and permanent protections for federal law for all Americans in vital areas of life like housing, access to public spaces, credit, education, jury service, and federally funded programs. So these are all things that we currently do not have protections against here in Georgia because there's no state law protecting us. We're one of only three states, by the way, that doesn't have a law protecting LGBTQ. And so this federal act is a very important step in giving the citizens of Georgia that are LGBTQ the protections that we so importantly deserve. I don't know, not a very good word. Anyway, it's very needed. Anyway, so I'm very excited that this is happening, and I'm hopeful that it'll be passing because it's certainly time to have the federal protections that we deserve. And that, I think, is it. We will be right back in a moment.
for the best in local, regional, national, and international blues, as well as different styles and interpretations of the blues, tune in to the Blues Therapy Show and Dance each and every Wednesday morning, 8 till 10 a.m. with Stagger Lee on your station for progressive information and music, WRFG 89.3 FM, Atlanta, and streaming live at WRFG.org.
Yes, Castle of Love. That's where I live, folks. In a castle of love. For those of you that are just joining us, this is WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM, streaming on WRFG.org. And you are listening to Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. And I am Greg Bossen. I am your host. Thank you so much for listening. And I am very excited to have a important guest on tonight. And just to let you know, the gentleman's name is Everton Blair. Everton actually grew up here in Gwinnett County and last month was elected as the chair of the Gwinnett County School Board, which I believe may be the largest in the state. I'm not sure. Everton, thank you so much for joining us, and maybe you can help me tease that out. Is that correct? Well, first of all, how are you?
Thanks for having me, Greg. It's a pleasure. And yes, Gwinnett County Schools are the largest public school system in the state of Georgia.
Which is kind of surprising to me. But you know, the city of Atlanta is fairly small. But I guess, how many students are you theoretically or technically in charge of, Everton?
Well, the difference is we're the second largest county, but not by very much. And then once you take out all of Atlanta public schools from Fulton County, then we beat both of them. But we've got 180,000 students.
Wow. That's amazing. Well, now, listen, the fact that you are doing this is cool, no matter whether you're gay, straight, trans, non-binary, it doesn't matter. That's really what we're ultimately trying to move towards. But it is important to say that you are the first gay individual that's ever served. It doesn't sound like there's probably been other LGBTQ members of the school board, but never a chair. Is that right?
That's right on both fronts. Yeah. Okay. Openly gay school board member in the state currently, and to our memory, our working memory, the only out chair.
You're the only openly gay board member in the whole state.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous with all those gay teachers. Tell me a little bit about, because you were actually elected to the board in 2018, so 4 years ago. So I guess, tell us a little bit about how it is that you came to do this. And I guess you'd want to give us a little history of your life here. You grew up in Gwinnett, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I had a tremendous amount of opportunity growing up here. And so I left. And always in the back of my mind knew that my home and my home community were here. And I mean, long story short, I was really frustrated at the political direction of the country when I was living in California and D.C. Wanted to do something that felt a lot closer to communities that I could identify with and came home and really didn't know what it was going to be, but knew that I had been working in education and had gotten so much out of the school system that I just came to a school board meeting. And was shocked. Every single leader that was on that dais had been in power since I was in kindergarten. And many of them had served even longer than that. We had such a diverse community that I experienced and benefited from, and yet none of that was reflected on our school board leadership. And the entire meeting went by without a single mention of curriculum and instruction. And so in my view, I saw these folks who, you know, there were retired teachers on the board, but there were no current educators. There weren't even current parents on that board. And they were the ones making the decisions on an education experience that I felt like had evolved from when they were in school or even when they had kids in school. And I felt like I could add a voice there, not to mention that in a county that's 76% students of color, it would be good to have one non-white board member.
Everybody was white?
Every single person.
Is everyone still white except you?
So I was the first, but now we've got three.
Okay. All right.
We've done a much better job at making up and uplifting the diversity in our community from the board leadership voice all the way through the system.
Because particularly in Gwinnett County, there's Latino, there's Asian, there's Black. I mean, it's a mix. I mean, that's, you know, well, I guess that and DeKalb County between those two counties is really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Black students make up the plurality of our district. And actually, Gwinnett has the plurality of the Latinos and the Asians in the state. So we've got a lot of diversity really within each community. It's not just in Duluth or Lawrenceville or Norcross. It's everywhere.
So for those people that are just kind of new to this, and I think I'm one of them, first of all, you were teaching before. Is that right? You were a teacher. So is this something that you can do in addition to still being a teacher?
You can. I mean, it's a little difficult given what time the meetings are and how much is demanded of you, but you cannot be employed by the school system that you over which you serve as board member.
And there's only five members, too. It's a small group.
Correct. Yeah. But you could teach at a charter school, or, you know, I could teach in Fulton or Cobb or DeKalb County and then still be a board member in Gwinnett.
Here's a question that maybe you don't want to answer, but what is the pay structure for board members? Can you live off that salary?
Not. Yeah, we get. So it's actually contractually tied in Gwinnett to what the state legislators make. So they just took a pay cut. So we make about $14,000 a year. It's less than minimum wage.
And how much time do you spend on this?
As board chair, given how many competing priorities and kind of surging demands there are with COVID and community response right now, I would say it's another full-time job.
Wow. And then do they provide you with staff support at least?
Somewhat. Not. I mean, what I really need is a scheduler and somebody to help manage the email flow, but we have a board coordinator that works to basically schedule the things that all five of us and the superintendent must do.
Wow. So when you ran in 2018, was the gay thing an issue? What was that experience like for you?
You know, it didn't really come up. And so much so that I felt like it was actually the reverse, that I needed to say something.
Right. Don't talk about it. Yeah.
And I never kind of avoided it or tried to hide it. But I did notice after I was elected that there were people who were celebrating that I was the first gay school board member. And then there would be folks that would reach out to them and say, no, don't say anything. And so then I felt there were people that were like apologizing to me, wondering if it was okay. And I realized like I had never formally made clear that I am openly gay and that please like share the story as you would authentically want to. And so I actually came out publicly in October of 2019, about 10 months into my term on National Coming Out Day. And I did it in a way to kind of center the identities of students and pull back my student experience and reflect on how much I wish I had somebody like me that I could look up to when I was a student at Shiloh Elementary, Middle, and High School in Gwinnett. And so my friends, family, everybody close to me has known. And when I was campaigning, I was talking about the issues that were in front of us at that moment. And, you know, I think people just assumed I was straight. So that's a little bit of why I felt the need to really correct the record.
Okay. So I was just going to suggest, I always was wondering if being gay actually played a role in helping you get elected, but you're telling me not really. It was more the issues that you were discussing, and you know, you're a person of color in a district that's 70% cover. Yeah, so it's more of that. Plus, you're very eloquent. I mean, I can see. So you had to unseat someone, I guess, then, right?
Initially, so the incumbent chose not to run and got a friend and kind of neighborhood supporter of his to run instead, and so it was an open seat.
Yeah, those do the elections. They take place at the same time as the traditional elections, and this is one of those areas where, you know, you're in the voting booth and you're like, well, I have no idea who any of these people are. And I guess people just either don't vote at all or vote for the incumbent. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what is that like trying to break in? So it probably sounds like your best shot is when somebody decides they're not going to run again. But what does a campaign look like? And you've never done anything like this before.
I had not the first clue about how to run a campaign, even how to qualify, be on the ballot, any of that. I just went to that board meeting and figured that somebody's got to figure it out. And I did learn that Gwinnett actually runs its school board elections differently than most other counties in the metro area, where we run partisan elections for our school.
Okay.
It was actually a Democratic primary where I had an opponent, and a general election where I had a Republican opponent. So there's a little bit of, like, you know, two-edged sword there, because you're politicizing issues that inherently might be either nonpartisan or bipartisan in nature. And then you're also, I think, you know, relying on the strength of a ticket in ways that may or may not actually relate to the candidacy or the qualification of the office.
And I'm just so curious about this. Somebody who's never done this before, I mean, what are you doing here? Are you knocking on doors? Are you meeting people? Is it your typical campaigning that you do? But you've got to have a core group of supporters that are pushing for you, I assume, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was beneficial that my entire high school community was in my school board district. So literally every neighbor, friend, you know, cousin that was in the neighborhood growing up and still lived there, basically still knew who I was, and was really shocked that I had come back home after, you know, college and grad school to run. So that was the kind of groundswell of support that began the campaign. But this was also 2018, when many folks in Gwinnett were running for races for the first time in reaction to the 2-year experience we had under the political administration in 2016 and 17. And so I actually had the fortune of being able to coordinate with a lot of other first-time candidates who themselves are running for state house and state senate, as well as folks like Sam Park and Ben Koo, two other openly gay, now elected officials that were running. We were running together and supporting each other and sharing resources. And Ben Koo and I actually share board districts. He's my board commissioner or county commissioner. And we have a huge overlap in the school board and county commission district. So we knocked doors together in Lilburn. And it was people like that who all of us were first time, didn't really know what we were doing, but we were able to do the work together, and all of it won.
And as you had said before we went on air, you were mentioning that this was the Stacey Abrams push in 2018, which unfortunately she didn't make it over the line, but I'm sure she drug a lot of other people over the line. So I imagine that you were a piece of that for sure.
Yeah, we did. I actually had the largest school board election flip in memory, maybe ever. But yeah, we flipped the seat by 31 points. And that wasn't just because of me. That was because of the work that people in the community were doing, realizing what the school board was. And that was just energy and enthusiasm in those midterms to make their voices heard. And so I, you know, a lot of different variables at play, and I'm thankful for the attention and energy that Leader Abrams provided.
Yeah, for sure. For those of you that are just joining us, you're listening to Alternative Perspectives. I'm Greg Bossen, and we are speaking to the first openly gay member and chair of the Gwinnett County School Board, Everton Blair. So So you got elected in 2018. You didn't decide, I guess you ran for chair in January. So, but when you first got on the board, you're this young black gay man with these four others. I mean, were they welcoming of you? Or you're going to be walking a thin line here when you talk, but how, what was the experience like for the first year or so?
You know, everyone would ask me that question. And so I think there was always this unspoken concern that it would not be a welcoming place because I appear to be and am very different than my colleagues. And the truth is, I have had an experience in Gwinnett that is unique to being able to be the first Black, gay, young person on this board that I know probably would not be the case had I not had that experience. So because I was the product of the community, the homegrown kid, and did so well at Shiloh, which is a school that is under-resourced in our community, I think it was a different angle, and it created an opportunity for me to be seen as the token poster child. And so that was always kind of this like praised dynamic of our board. Like, yeah, we're, you know, these four older white folks, but like, look, we got EJ. Everything's good.
Check.
Yeah, exactly.
God, if you were only disabled.
And so the whole time I really was the person who was trying to learn and understand like what we had been doing and what had changed and what needed to change. And I think that perspective did rub against some of the status quo at times, but it was, I think, in good enough and authentic enough spirit, which they recognized, and they just couldn't deny that, like, I'd been doing this work and I lived the experience. And so, there were a couple tense moments where I was surprised at how immaturely some of my board colleagues would respond to what at its root were not personal attacks. They were just deep, contentious educational topics. And then that was unfortunate, but overall it was a pretty pleasant and simple working experience.
Well, you're on their turf now, you know, and I mean, there's probably a piece, I would imagine that if I was some old person on a school board for years and years and years, you know, if I could get past the whole, you know, you're on my turf thing, might be kind of nice to have somebody that's willing to take some of the workload, be honest with you. Yeah. So I'm assuming there was some of that too. Plus I can tell from talking to you that you generally likable individuals. So.
Yeah. I try not to make it about the people that are saying the things, but about the things that they are saying.
So having said that, and one thing I do not know about is what does a school board do anyway?
Oof, my favorite question to answer. So school boards are actually unique in their state constitutional authority and in just how they conduct business. It's one of those places where like you literally have to have three people or a quorum present in order to have anything happen. And it's one of the few elected offices that holds legislative, executive, and judicial authority. So we're kind of like all three branches of government for schools at the same time. We pass a budget. We write policy, which is legislative in function. We hire and evaluate an employee, the superintendent, super executive in function. And judicially, we sit as an appellate board. So any personnel issues that get appealed or grievances that have to come before a kind of judicial body, like that's us. We also hear all the student discipline hearing appeals. And so, you know, you don't really see that in a lot of other positions. And there's a lot of shared authority there that dictates how a whole school system runs, especially around passing that budget. And so anything land acquisition is all under the school system. And pending litigation that the school district is undergoing, that's all our authority. And we're the folks that are responsible for, allocating the funds that we get from the state and federal government to make sure that our school system runs.
How much time do you spend, or I guess I should rephrase this, how much input or control do you have with what is literally happening in the classroom?
That is where it becomes a little bit of, it's up to the dynamic of the board, right? And so not very much, but we can set the direction for where we want to see resources go. And what that means is, it is rare that I walk into a classroom and say, I remember the conversation we had, and that is the outcome of the discussion that we had, right? But mm-hmm. it is true that we can see changes in how actions are made at the local and even at the district level based on priorities that we set in, from the board level. And so when we speak up and say, like, we think there needs to be a deeper investment in social and emotional learning, and that we need behavioral specialists to attenuate some of the discipline gaps that we're seeing in our school system, we might see that staffing allocation show up more when we walk into schools.
So is that an example of something that you really wanted, that you focused on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I've been a board member. We have grown the number of social workers, clinical school psychologists, and behavioral specialists. And I literally have seen those people walking the buildings, which I did not see before.
Does that mean that you allocate resources? Is it more like, it's almost like restricted dollars? Like, if you decide that you want this, there is money for it.
Yeah. I mean, your budget is your priority. So we can set forth a number of staffing line items that, you know, change who is in the building and what they're doing.
So I guess what I'm trying to understand is, who is it that decides we're going to hire one of these people? Like, actually, it's interesting that you would discuss this priority, but I have a very close friend who just moved here from North Carolina and got a job in Gwinnett County as a behavioral specialist at one of the schools. This is her first year. But she's a speech pathologist, which of course means everything.
We need more. And actually the referral bonus structure. if you refer a speech pathologist, you get the highest award.
Oh, really? So is that, but what I'm saying is, did that principal decide they were going to fill that slot? Or are you saying that you told them they needed to have X many?
That goes both ways. For speech pathologists, that decision has been made at the district level. So what happens is each department basically gives these improvement requests to the superintendent during budget season. They all talk and figure out what capacity they need, what capacity they have, figure out, you know, advocate for more this, reprioritization of this, put this binder together. The superintendent gives us his or her recommended budget. And as a board, we then say, looking at this, I won't approve it unless you give more of this and less of this, or this is what I think should happen, or, you know, where's the priority in early literacy? Why aren't there more interventionists at the early elementary level? And so what then they can do is say, okay, we're going to give discretionary funds to each school, where if you see the need there, then that principal can say, I'm going to hire one more of this, one less of this. But then there are certain positions that we do as a district say, we want one of these in every school. A librarian, for example. And then there are certain positions district-wide that flex depending on the student enrollment. So you might have more cafeteria workers if you've got, you know, 4,000 kids in a high school versus the 900 in an elementary school. All of that flexible allocation, though, is based on student enrollment. And then we do the kind of district-wide, does this meet our priorities overall? And then we would approve that budget, or we'd send it back and say, I want to see more of this and less of that.
So it's departments, not schools, that are providing this.
It's both. There are certain positions, like every school is going to have a PE teacher, right?
Right.
Every school is going to have X. Every school is going to have Y. And so that can be like a lot of clerical workers and a lot of just paraprofessional positions. Like, that's going to be a standard across the board. Then there are department-based positions that are at certain schools.
Gotcha. Both. All right. Well, I want to talk. I want to talk a little bit more about why certain schools seem to end up getting more funds allocated than others, depending upon the area. I know that happens in the city of Atlanta a lot. But we're going to take a little break here, we are speaking with Everton Blair, the school board chair for Gwinnett County, and we will be right back.
WRFG and the Cary Steele Pitts Foundation celebrate Black History Month.
WRFG and the Cary Steele Pitts Foundation recognize Dr. Johnny L. Clark as one of Atlanta's great women, a leader in accounting, business, and education. She's a founding member of the AWSCPA of Georgia and a lifelong champion for diversity and inclusion. Among her many career milestones are service as an educator, a bank president, and dean of the Atlanta University Graduate School of Business. At the age of 83, Dr. Clark has seen immense change in the city of Atlanta. She became a fierce advocate for fairness and opportunity, striving to ensure equal rights and inclusion for all. She's a true leader and a shining example through persistence, determination, and sheer hard work. She earned the distinction of being the first Black woman to receive a PhD in accounting and business administration from the University of Georgia.
This has been another public service announcement from your station for progressive information, WRFG 89.3.
All right. Keeping up with Stevie Wonder here. That's jamming. And you are listening to Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour on WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. I am Greg Boston, your host, and we are speaking with the school board chair of the largest school district in the state, Gwinnett County, a man by the name of Everton Blair, who is gay, not that it matters. Of course, it always does for this show. But continuing on with our conversation, I guess I'm just a little curious. I know that in the city of Atlanta, at least, there are certain schools like Sarah Smith Elementary that you walk in that school and it's a palace. You know, they have, you know, there's a whole room that's just for Mac versus the PC room. I mean, it's just crazy. You know, whereas you go down on the south side, and the schools are falling apart. And I'm just wondering, why does that happen? Does it happen in Gwinnett County? And how is it that happens?
So that happens for a number of ways. Some school districts do a really localized school funding formula where the property taxes that are levied in that particular area get reallocated back to that school. We don't do that. In Gwinnett, all the Gwinnett countywide funds get put into the general fund, and then we distribute it that way. We still end up with that dynamic where certain schools look nicer, are bigger, and fancier, but it's more based on where new development is happening. And so Our issue is people are generally following trends of a similar vein. And so when we have a school that explodes in population size over a couple of years, like we have to expand that school. But that means that the school, the districts, the parts of the district that everybody's trying to get into and go to, the parts that are booming, the parts that get a lot of attention, it kind of self-perpetuates this. Well, now we have to expand it. Now we got to build another school over there. Now we got to do this. And then the new things based on that building and construction are in that school.
Right. And then you see this new building with new things in it. And then that probably attracts more. So I could see where itself is. How would you fix that problem? Would you say,
we have to do as much with that? Work. We have to do just as much work investing in our underpopulated and under-resourced schools so that not only are the opportunities that are available to those students just as high quality as in the affluent, you know, high demand areas, but also so that we can bring folks to the realization that you don't have to go to the one school in the community. You can go anywhere. And so I think it's just a deep commitment to putting the resources where you know that you need to increase the equity. And that's, you know, that's the same story as it is in any school district. You know, the schools where you have less funding because students are leaving. And when that underpopulation happens, it kind of in your mind becomes hard to justify spending more money for fewer kids. But that is the work that has to ensure that those kids are not being left behind and that you are bringing some of the attention, energy, enthusiasm, the ability to attract teachers and retain them there. And that all takes extra money.
Well, is that something that you know, because you're the chair of the school board. So is that something that you're actively working towards? And if so, how?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that the way that we've been doing it in the past has been in targeted programming that is supposed to attract certain types of kids. Like what we were doing in the past was, oh, let's put an IB program in this school. And I think instead we need to be giving a more holistic, like wraparound school approach so that kids realize like, oh, my child is going to be well served at that school. Because the reality of the situation is if you are trying to, you know, busting your butt to try to get into the certain areas of the community that already where the high school already has 5,000 kids, teachers are less likely to know your individual child's name. You will get less FaceTime with your counselor. There's going to be more folks competing for every opportunity, right? And so we can actually flip the narrative now and say, you will be just as well served. And we're going to put more resources in the underpopulated schools because we recognize the needs there. And then you'll have parents and families that realize, oh, if I want the special, you know, targeted attention for my child, it's actually a better bang for the buck. It's a better move for me to go to the school district that would previously have been seen as under-resourced because we're putting money there, because we're allocating more resources there. And that is work that I've always been an advocate of, you know, having gone to the high school in the district that is the smallest in terms of population size for a cluster feeder high school. I've seen it. And so I know that, you know, you just throw a stone over and you see booming neighborhood where they're constantly building and where there are dozens of trailers, and you don't see that on this side. So how can
right.
you doing that work over here?
But there's nothing that you're doing specifically right now. Well, I guess this past year you really haven't been able to do much because you've been dealing with COVID, which I do want to talk about, but I hope that there's some sort of a long-term plan. And just for our listeners, it helped people to understand the difference between wraparound services at a school versus what was the thing you said, an IP or what is that?
International Baccalaureate Program.
Okay, so that's kind of a fancy smancy bell and whistle thing versus a wraparound service, which would be more something like what?
Like a after school program that would allow the students to stay longer and get enrichment on, you know, any number of activities, but it could be for high school students like workforce development or job training. Mm-hmm. It could be for elementary students like extra reading support or just like enrichment where they're just doing more accelerated work. Mm-hmm. Thinking creatively about like, what is it that would be really attractive to families and where we can build capacity for students to just be doing good stuff after school and in additional ways and then meeting their needs where it's you get more.
What's the pushback for that? Because it doesn't sound like you've moved on it yet. So what would be the pushback to those to throwing a lot of money in those arenas?
Limited bucket. Just.
Yeah.
The fixed amount of money that we have overall. And so developing the will to put extra money there has got to come from somewhere else. Mm-hmm.
Do you have schools that have PTOs or PTAs, parent teacher associations or organizations that are supportive? I know that there are certain schools in the city where I am here in Atlanta that they can really make a huge difference.
They do. Yeah, they certainly do. And we have active PTAs and PTSAs mm-hmm. at every single school.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. Well, so who wants to talk about COVID? Nobody. But so where is Gwinnett County right now? I think the students are back in school. Is that right?
All families have an option currently for their students to attend in person or digitally.
Mm-hmm. And the digital situation, do you guys provide the platform, or are the teachers supposed to figure it out themselves?
We do provide the platform for students who need it. Yeah. And they just express that they need a laptop or even a hotspot, and then they get that through their local school.
And how many students do you think in Gwinnett County have been have gone missing or fallen through the cracks, not showing up, don't know where they are, not talking to them?
Yeah, it's hard to answer, but depending on how you define I've heard numbers anywhere from upwards of 2,000 students that we've lost, either in terms of just general enrollment or lost consistent contact with. And then our overall numbers are down, particularly in kindergarten, because many of those families just chose not to enroll their child. And then some of them with means may have chosen a different option. But the kind of more like 45% of our students are virtual right now. That is occurring more at the high school level, than at the elementary level. And so there's also a dynamic of, for students that we used to be able to see every day in the building and the bus used to pick them up, there's just that kind of more difficult connection, where sometimes if they don't show up to the class on Zoom, then, you know, you're wondering, is that an absence or is there something else that's going on? And so that's where that number grows a bit. That's one of the priorities that we have to address when we come back.
Are the schools responsible for trying to find out where these kids are?
Yeah, they're the counseling department, the registrars, like it's all hands on deck for that.
Yeah, work. Yeah.
Doing that. And it is actually showing up in every single school. And so there's work to be done everywhere.
Well, I'm, you know, and I was talking about it with a couple of friends, and it, you know, there's just going to be this whole COVID generation of students that are basically behind. I mean, you almost want to just have a do-over and hold everybody back, but you can't, because there's the first year people coming in. So there'll be this, you know, if you held people from second grade back to first, then first grade would be doubled. I mean, it's just a mess. It really is.
We have to put our attention on this issue right now, because we have the proactive benefit now of knowing that we didn't know last year that this was going to happen. Now we know that eventually we'll be outside of it, but like, what will we have put in place to deal with it? And in my view, we can actually make up the lost time and close the gap. We just have to make sure that with this on grade level access, with whatever grade our students find themselves in when we all return, that we have the appropriate scaffolds in place and focus on the absolutely vital work of that grade level. We can meet the need for sure. And there will be, you know, if you've got a sixth grader that's now going to seventh grade but had a really rough sixth grade year, that seventh grade curriculum, you can focus on the work that's in there and just build bridges from their fifth grade experience and get there. And you've still got, you know, eighth through 12th grade to make that all count. It gets a little bit trickier in ninth and 10th grade, where you've got less time left with them. But even there, they have had, fortunately, you know, 8 to 9 years previous where we can build on those skills and just accelerate them into the 11th grade. There's some content areas where I know that will be a challenge if they missed a whole kind of topic or focus area, but that's where we need to have the thinking around what extra resources we're going to put into those classes so that kids can spend more time on the stuff that they missed.
Yeah, it's a practical answer that you're giving, and it's a sad answer, but I just think you're right. There's just no way to avoid the truth that these kids, you know, will have some gray spots, you know, that you're going to have to try and fill in. Like you said, you give them the most vital components of each grade. You make sure that they have, but you know, until they flush through the system and we get back to normal, that's just going to be the way it is. But on the other hand, I mean, there are advantages or opportunities here. I'm wondering, remote learning, what do you see in terms of like keeping that as a component of the learning experience going forward?
Yeah, I think that's one of the carryovers that will be interesting. I know that we've always had a Gwinnett online campus. I think for a lot more families, having had the experience with their students, and for some of them where it's gone really well for either certain courses or certain students, that will be another option that we maintain for them. And then overall, like there are just elements to recovery. If a kid missed a day, that now teachers have all adapted into this format of, hey, I can offer this in a virtual capacity that will allow and maybe enhance some of the instructional materials or experience that my students will have now. And that's all of those carryovers, I think, will be really important. We have a working group right now that's basically going to put to task, like, what things do we want to keep from this year and a half?
Mm-hmm.
Standardize. And that's where I think we'll have some really good opportunities for students going
forward. And this is, I might be skinning my ignorance, but is No Child Left Behind, is that gone? Or are we still dealing with that?
You know how the federal government basically passes the new law and calls it a different name. And so No Child Left Behind is now reauthorized as the Every Student Succeeds Act. It's a lot of the same stuff, but it gives power kind of back to states to develop their own plans, and doesn't have a demonstrable like shift or change for most local school districts. Most of our money comes from the state and from local dollars.
Okay. And what about all the testing requirements? What did they do with that over the last couple of years?
States. So what we do is the milestones in Georgia. And that's a part of our state plan that we send up to the feds. And that's still going on, but has been waived during COVID. And so
Okay. We're
waiting to see what the Georgia Department of Education does for this year, thinking that it probably will be waived again. And then it going forward, you know, after we get out of this, then the state will determine what our assessments are.
And nobody fails right now, right? Everybody just passes.
You got to show up to class, and there's a little.
Do you? I didn't think you did. Okay.
there is leniency and grace in this period, to your point, right? Because students did not ask for this, but we still are maintaining that you must express effort. You must, learn the material to the best of your ability. And it is a non-ideal situation that we all have to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, actually we don't have too much more time, but, what I wanted to do is I wanted to, just real quickly get your take on, the horrific bill. What is it? Bill 2. Let me see where I had that up here before. And now it's gone. The trans bill. This is House Bill 276 in the state legislature that is seeking to define gender as a person's biological sex. And the relevance of that is the act basically says that somebody who is a biological male at birth cannot participate in women's sports at high school and collegiate level. Is that right?
I think that would have just an impact on public and private schools K-12, but
yeah. So that was just put out there just last month, I think. So, I mean, what is your stance on that? Or are you, what are your thoughts on that?
We have seen assaults on the trans community time and time again. And I oppose this bill. I think that if the General Assembly wants to spend time doing something for kids, they should focus on adding resources and not creating unnecessary rules that demean and attack students and their gender identities. I also think that there's just a general practice of like coming up with these ridiculous bills, not having had the empathy interviews and direct one-on-one contact with students and people whom it actually affects. And so I think that there, it's just ridiculous. And there are ways that we should be spending our time that don't demean and belittle anyone's identities. And we should be focused on that.
Yeah, and my understanding is with a lot of these things like this bill, first of all, it's an extremely small number of kids that we're talking about here. And second of all, I don't think there's children that have a problem with it. I mean, it's like a solution in search of a problem. I don't think the kids have an issue with it. Do you know how many trans people do you think you have in Gwinnett County right now?
I have no actual estimation. And that's again to the point of
that also want to play sports in female, and then there's a female student that has a problem with it. I mean,
well, and again,
it's gonna happen, you know,
have issues that deeply impact so many of our students. Every single one of the education bills right now should be focused on that. We should not be terrorizing any group of students. And gender identity is real. It is different than biological sex. We got to move on.
So, just kind of the last, I wanted to give you a minute. How long is your term as chair?
Our chair terms are every year. We pick the person to serve for in January to serve that year. But my term as a board member is through 2022.
Okay. Boy, you picked a hell of a year to decide to be chair. You get along with your superintendent?
Very much so. Yeah, he's been the superintendent since I was in kindergarten.
Really? Oh, that's so cool. That is so cool. So if you could do one thing, and I'm not talking about your dream, I'm talking about something practical that you really want to try and get accomplished before your term ends in 2022 that you think would make most difference, what would that be? And put some meat on the bone. Give me something specific. What do you want to do?
I want to transition to a leadership dynamic where our board works to bring in the perspective of the community and where we see that change in the budget.
Okay. So you want more involvement from the community.
Mm-hmm. I want to see it in our leadership. I want to see the capacity that we have to actually hold our system accountable, be productive. And I don't want to see a board that simply relegates its authority to the school system without any input from community, teachers, students.
Well, I wonder if you need more board members. 5 sounds pretty small to me.
Honestly, you can do it with 5 if you've got a strong working relationship. 7 is more people, longer meetings, and can be beneficial, but you can make either work.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Everton. I really do appreciate it. And if I said Everett during this hour, I apologize.
You did. Most people make that mistake, but you were good.
Okay. All right. Well, Everton is a very cool name, actually. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the show. And I'm sure the county thanks you as well for coming back from your travels around the globe to spend time in Little Gwinnett County here. And so that will be it for the show. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for having me.
All right, buddy. And that is going to be it. And next week will be a very challenging week indeed for me. That's a personal thing you don't need to know about. Anyway, I'll see you next week. And thank you so much for listening to Alternative Perspectives. Take care.